Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Chinmaya Dunster. Chinmaya took sannyas in 1982 and played music live for Osho. Chinmaya is a musician and filmmaker involved with environmental issues in his adopted homeland, India. Chinmaya has produced 20 CDs and various short films. I'm so happy to have Chinmaya on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Chinmaya, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much, Swaram, for inviting me. I'm honored that you have done so.
The honor is all mine. So, to start, tell us a bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, that's a classic story of how Osho always said that the women lead and the men follow. So, I followed a woman. I met a woman who was on her way to Pune, and I basically knew nothing about Rajneesh at the time, or almost nothing. But because I fell in love with her, then she led me to Osho.
Okay, fair enough. And how you took sannyas, how you decided to take sannyas, and maybe if you can tell us shortly your first meeting with Osho, first time you met Osho in the body.
Okay, so, well, I fell in love with my sannyasin friend in 1979, and I started doing meditations and groups in London, where I was living, and lots of our friends were sannyasins, of course, and we were having sannyas parties, and I was fully involved in the sannyas world, and I used to think to myself, wow, you know, this is such a great way of life, it's such a great philosophy, they're such great people, but, you know, I'm a hippie anarchist type, I don't need any leaders, why do we need this guy with the beard? So that took 3 years while I thought to myself like this. And suddenly I was doing, I think, some group anyway in England, in one of the centres in England. And then I saw Osho's picture on the wall and I looked him in the eyes and I went, oh, yeah, the old guy with the beard. It's true, isn't it? All this would just not be here without you, would it? And I don't know, my heart melted and I fell in love with him. That would have been 1982. I suddenly realized why we need the old man with the beard. And I suddenly realized I love the old man with the beard. And I took sannyas at Medina, which was a big Osho Rajneesh center in England at the time, took sannyas in 1982. And then I was busy with various things in London at that time. I never went to the ranch, which was the commune in America. So I didn't personally go into the same room with Osho until he came back from the ranch to India. And that would have been in 1986, I think, when I saw him in Bombay and went to my first discourse, actually in his presence. But I will go on to say that really I feel my first meeting with Osho was an incredible event that happened for me in Buddha Hall in Pune in 1989, during the year before he left, where when he left discourse in those days, he used to be driven round the outside of Buddha Hall and back to his room. So the Rolls Royce would take him round Buddha Hall. As he left the podium, he'd get into the Rolls-Royce, drive around Buddha Hall. And Buddha Hall was enclosed by an enormous mosquito net, which they used to say was the largest mosquito net in the world. So the walls of Buddha Hall were a mosquito net. So as Osho's car drove round outside that mosquito netting to take him home, many of us would go and watch the car through the mosquito net. Well, it was a rainy monsoon day, evening, night, and I went to the back of the hall and stood up against the mosquito net with a lot of other people and watched the car slowly coming through the rain, through the trees. And suddenly the car stopped right outside the mosquito net where I was standing. Of course, it was right outside the spot where lots of other people were standing too. And the window rolled down and suddenly Osho's face was right there in the window and I saw his face through the raindrops that were falling. And it seemed to me that he looked right at me, that he was looking straight into my eyes. And in that moment, I heard this voice inside me saying something like, just keep going exactly the way you are, Chinmaya. Everything's fine. And I felt it like it just simply penetrated my heart completely. I felt so grateful. I felt so joyful that this message had come to me and that I'd been seen. And I'm sure everybody who was standing right next to me also felt they'd been seen in that moment too. But that was my experience. And I went home so ecstatic. And I went home with what I feel is really the essential message that I've had from Osho in all the years with him, including all the discourses I've listened to and all the times I've listened, been around him and heard what he had to say and read what he had to say. That essential message came through to me at that moment. And it's the one message that really stays with me and I feel is the essence of his message. Is that all our doubts about ourselves, all our self-criticisms, all our worries, our anxieties and everything, are an absolute falsehood. It's just nonsense. We are okay. I am okay the way I am. Just keep going the way I am. I don't know, it's not easy to put it in words exactly without it sounding trite in a way and sounding a bit like sort of positive thinking and that kind of thing. But on a really deep level, that was the message I got from Osho.
That's really beautiful, and thanks for sharing that. And I really feel it's alive. As you say, it's vibrating, still alive. That message is there, and I'm sure that, it's still within you and you're living it. So thanks, it's wonderful. So let's talk about music. So you are a musician with 20 CDs under your belt, and you even got to play for Paul McCartney's wedding in 2002. As an artist, you explore the territory between Indian classical music and various Western music traditions. And Osho spoke on many occasions about the need of bridging East and West. So would it be fair to say that with your music, you are realizing Osho's vision in terms of bridging East and West?
Yeah, well, it's a big claim to make, isn't it? But I mean, I suppose I'm doing my little bit for that. Yeah, I've added my 2 cents to that. To that musical fusion of East and West, absolutely. And I think, especially when you listen to what Osho says about Indian classical music, how it's basically the closest music that there is to silence. I feel that I've explored that territory of taking music as close to silence as it can go. And some of that comes across in my recordings, but a lot of it really is about live performance and having a live audience and taking a live audience into silence through music, and particularly really through Indian classical music. It's the best vehicle I know for taking people beyond music and into silence.
So how would you describe how is it possible to get into silence through classical music? Why classical music is more suitable for meditation or for helping people get into silence compared to Western music?
Yes, well, it's a great mystery. And obviously, I can't claim it's a universal truth, because even if Osho said it like that, I mean, not every person responds to Indian classical music in the same way. And so it doesn't necessarily take everybody into silence. But there are various levels of answer to that question. One is that you have to look at the kind of people who developed Indian classical music, and it was developed by masters of a spiritual tradition, actually of two spiritual traditions, of the Indian Hindu spiritual tradition and the Sufi Islamic spiritual tradition. And basically, Indian classical music is a fusion of those two traditions. And as part of the lineage of masters in those traditions, some of the spiritual masters in those traditions were also musical masters. So Osho talked, for instance, about Ustad Alauddin Khan, who was the guru of Ravi Shankar, Ali Akbar Khan, and various other major artists of the 20th century. Osho talked about Alauddin Khan, that Alauddin Khan became enlightened through his music, that on his deathbed, Alauddin Khan was enlightened. And this is basically a unique tradition in terms of the music of the world, because, Mozart, for all his qualities, was not brought up in a tradition of of enlightenment, you know, of aiming towards enlightenment, of meditation, of any of these things. So Indian music, Indian classical music, was developed itself by masters who understood silence, who understood enlightenment, or, you know, that's a strange thing to say, understood enlightenment, but you know, who were born into a tradition that included such thing as enlightenment. So that's very different than any other music of the world, in the same way that India is a very different country than any other country of the world, because, as Osho said, there is no other country that has spent so many thousands of years more or less ignoring the material in favor of the spiritual and exploring the spiritual at such depth. So, yeah, it's Indian classical music is part of the uniqueness of India itself.
Okay, that makes lots of sense, and it's beautiful, you know, that you contextualize the music within the spiritual tradition of India, and yeah, you know, that's probably why it works. So let's change topic and talk about family, something completely new into this podcast up to date. And I'm aware that in 2009 you decided to have a child, and you are now father of Koyal, a beautiful 9-year-old girl. Considering your past as a hippie anarchist, as you said before, Osho Sanyasi, and I mean, you still are an Osho Sanyasi, but you know, you had a past of someone who is an artist, who is a world traveler, rebel, and how did you come to this point of becoming a family man?
Oh, that's a lovely question, Swaram, because of course the answer is it just happened to me, you know. I never thought I would have kids. I had no interest. And, you know, I could very easily have been another one of these old grey-haired sannyasins, and there are plenty of us around the world who never had children and never wanted to have children. But because my partner Naveena is 17 years younger than me, and when I met her in Pune in 1999 and we fell in love, she made it very clear, one day we're going to have a child. I want a child. So if you want to be with me, you know, you better understand I'm going to want a child. So, you know, a child happened eventually after we'd been together already 10 years, more or less. Yes, we had been together 10 years. Then a child finally happened. And, you know, it was a complete surprise to me, really, that I had a child, because I never thought that I would, and I never planned to, and I can never say that I wanted to. But obviously, I wanted to have Naveena happy, because, like they say, happy wife, happy life. So I said, yes, okay, let's go for it. You know, let's have the child.
Okay, look, I'm laughing my head off because, you know, it's really, it's your honesty, it's hilarious and it's beautiful. And, well, okay, so basically this happened to you, and it sounds like a woman brought you to Osho, and now a woman is bringing you to family. You're led by women in your life.
Absolutely, yeah. Blame my mother, man, you know. She loved me too much.
So children are wild, right? Whereas society and civilization do not sit well with wildness. And what I've always loved about Osho, his meditations and his sannyasins, is this sense of wildness. With Osho, you are encouraged to be wild, to go totally mad, to express yourself fully, which is what children do normally, naturally. So how a wild guy like you, who never liked to be told what to do, now is coping with educating a child, where sometimes you have to tell the child, you know, do this, don't do that.
Yes. Well, man, it's a massive koan. And, you know, this is what actually people have always said, that children are great teachers, you know, that there's an immense teaching that comes through the child, because, of course, this is the point where, you know, you face a whole nother level of teaching, really, because suddenly, instead of just being responsible for myself and for my own enlightenment, you know, which was my life as a hippie and my life as a sannyasin until I have a kid. Now, suddenly, I'm actually legally, and you can say, you know, ethically responsible for another person's life. And I have to tell that person how to live sometimes. You know, I have to guide them and all the rest. And it's a huge koan. You know, I don't know if that answers your specific question, just by backing out of the answer, really, and saying it's an immense puzzle.
Well, it is indeed. How is your experience? I mean, because 9-year-old is already, you know, sometimes I'm sure you have to put those boundaries. When they're maybe 2, 3, 4, you just need to make sure they don't hurt themselves and you can direct. But as they start growing, especially when they get into their teenagers, then it becomes a little bit more that, you know, sometimes you have to be tough or you have to, you know, put some boundaries, I guess. You know, I'm not a father, so, but that's my understanding. So have you find yourself in such situation? And you know, for me, because I remember as a child, I never liked people telling me what to do. And still to today, is I'm probably still this part of the child inside. Is, you know, it's when someone gives me orders, I really don't like it. So how do you find yourself in the position where you have to for the benefit of the child?
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing is that really my approach to my child is the same as Osho's approach to his disciples and our approach to each other as disciples, as people, which is, you know, immense respect. So, you know, there has to be and there is a boundless respect for the fact that Coyle is another being. She may have come through me and she may be temporarily in my care, but she is another individual. And Osho's emphasis on the individual was absolute, wasn't it? You know, it was about the individual that mattered to him. Everything was about the individual and freedom. So my immense respect for Coyle as a separate human being who is going to have her own path and is going to go on in this life, presumably long after I'm already gone. My respect to her, you know, involves not just telling her what she has to do and what she mustn't do, but obviously explaining why. So, I mean, you know, for all of us parents, there are massive issues around sugar and there are massive issues around screen time. So, you know, instead of just saying, well, look, you know, you can't have more sugar, you can't have more screen time, it's obviously about explaining why sugar's bad and, you know, why screen time's bad and encouraging her to feel for herself. What happens if you eat too much sugar? What does your stomach actually do? What does your energy levels do? What do you feel like actually? Do you feel well or not? And so the guidance is always really about asking her to look at herself and be true to herself. How do you feel if you've watched too much screen? Do you come out happy from that? Look at you, you know, look at yourself, look at your behavior. If you do certain things, you don't feel good and you don't act good and you don't spread goodness and happiness around you. So it's trying to encourage her to use her intelligence to understand herself and to look inside herself. So in that way, you can say, I'm guiding her to listen to herself.
How do you see her responding to this approach?
Yeah, well, Coyle is, I mean, she's an amazing little being. They all are, of course. That's it. As soon as you have enough respect to see a child and respect them for who they are, you see they're all amazing. I mean, all her friends are amazing too. But, I mean, I see Coyle as an amazing person. And, yeah, she responds to it. But, you know, it's incredible. She bringing her own shit into this world. She must have brought it in. We noticed it as soon as she was born, really. She got her own issues, the own things that upset her and make her angry. She's got attitude. She can be nasty. You know, she's not an angel in any way. You know, she's got her own karmas and all the rest. But at least we can say, look, we talk about everything. And at least we can say we're open about everything. There are no secrets. There are no taboo subjects. There's nothing hidden. So, yeah, she responds to that. There's no doubt about it. I mean, she's very mature in some ways. And in other ways, she's just a total kid, you know, and acts like an idiot sometimes. But then, so I act like an idiot too. And this is why I say she's such a good teacher, because, man, if I act like an idiot, she'll point it out. She sees it right away, you know, if I'm inconsistent or hypocritical or overreactive, you know, she spots it all right away and I get it straight back in my face.
One of the main thing that I remember from Osho when he talks about this topic of education and children is that he says that children are the most bullied people in the world. And it's true. I mean, like, I never really appreciated that. I remember as a child, and I see it even nowadays, like, you know, the child wants to do something, wants to say something, and then, you know, whoever is there, the parents or all the adults are, don't do, just shut up. You know, like, you're a child, you're just, basically, you're not a person, you're not an individual, you're not a being. So, you know, what you said before, I think your child is very lucky to have you and that, you know, you have this almost pair-to-pair experience.
It's respect between equals, no question about it. And I mean, she took sannyas 2 years back in Delhi. You know, she wanted to. It was her decision. She decided to take sannyas. She doesn't use her sannyas name at the moment, but, you know, she wanted to take it. Now, look, you know, then she's my equal in every way, isn't she? She wanted to take sannyas. She's a sannyasin of Osho for her own reasons, just as I am. And she's very temporarily in my care. You know, 17, 18, 19 years, they pass so quickly. I mean, she's halfway there already. Another 9 years, you know, she's out of my responsibility. It doesn't mean she's out of my love or that I'm out of her love, but she's got her own destiny then, hasn't she? And, you know, this is a whole other topic, really, that about the fact that, you know, there's a new generation of sannyas kids coming up now. And how do we nurture them?
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, there are lots of sannyasin souls who are looking for suitable parents to come back to the world. And, you know, there is no better way than finding, you know, people like you. So do you feel there is some truth in it? So is it your experience?
I hadn't, to be honest with you, I hadn't even really thought about that. Yes, it sounds logically true, doesn't it? You know, that there could well be old sannyasins wanting to come back now. Yeah, it makes sense. But whoever they are, these new kids that are, you know, that are coming into sannyasin families, they have, well, you know, as sannyasin parents, you know, we have another koan, which is that if you look back at Osho's original vision, really, for the commune and all the rest, and what he said, he was very much in favor of kids' communes, you know, and he could see the toxicity that comes from nuclear families, you know, and kids spending too much time with their parents. And, you know, his vision really was that kids live separately, in a way, in their own kids' commune. Doesn't mean that they're completely isolated from their parents or anything like that. It wasn't not about strict sort of rules like of segregation, like in the Israeli kibbutz system. But nevertheless, he thought that kids flower best in the company of other kids and in their own commune, where they don't have to deal with all their parents' shit all the time, you know. But because of the nature of the way the world went after Osho left the body, and, you know, there is no kids' commune, and there is really no prospect of creating a kids' commune, you know. And it's one of my great regrets that I can't send Coyle to a school that implements Osho's vision of education, because Coast One closed down, well, almost 20 years ago now. Coast One was the school in Devon, you know, the kids' commune school. And it's impossible to recreate such a space in today's world, really. There aren't enough sannyasin parents. We're too scattered all over the world. We can't function exactly like the parents of those days did, where the parents would be in Pune with Osho and the kids would be at the Osho school in Devon, or at the school outside the gates in Pune too. Those days are gone. So now we have this difficult situation as Osho parents that we're, you know, isolated in nuclear families. And one of the things I'm very excited about right now coming here to Devon is that there are several other families where one or both of the parents are sannyasins and with kids around Coyle's age. And that's something I haven't had before in New Zealand at all. Or in Goa, when we lived in Goa before New Zealand. So it's a whole new phase now to say, okay, so we're potentially, you know, half a dozen sannyasin parents, yeah, and we've all got kids in that same age range, about 8 to 10. It's a very interesting moment for me, you know, is to see what can come out of that, actually.
Yeah, that's. I think it's a great point. And it's one of the reasons why I felt like, for me, having a child, it's not a good idea. It's great to hear that you're back in Devon, where there are lots of sannyasin, and somehow you're trying to recreate, to some extent, that spirit of community. So I've got another question on this topic. In my understanding, Osho was inviting his sannyasins to focus on enlightenment and make that a priority in life. And of course, if you have a child, your focus becomes the child. So how do you personally reconcile this search for enlightenment with the need for you to be present for your child?
I think the only way I can really doing it is by taking the child as the teacher and saying, okay, she will be my route to enlightenment right now, you know, at least for the next few years while she is my responsibility and care. And after that, okay, maybe I can return to having another priority in my life. But it just is a reality that, you know, responsibility for her is my priority. It has to be, you know. I still have to look after myself. I still have to look after my own needs, you know, to be a musician and a husband and all those things. So it's very important to keep myself happy as well and keep myself, not deny myself anything. But it's, I think the only route really now is do as many meditations as I can, as life allows me to do, but work on myself through being a father.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so we are heading towards the end of the show, and before I ask you three final questions, I'd love to hear about your current activities. Of course, you just moved back to the UK from New Zealand, so a big change in your life, but I know that you are involved with many projects, including making films to raise awareness on environmental issues in India. So I'd love to hear something about your latest or current projects in addition to the music that you produce.
Okay, well, you know, there isn't actually any particular film project right now. I'm working on a couple of songs, one of which is a lovely poem from Tagore where he imagines himself in the role of a young mother looking at her first child, and it's a very beautiful poem that Tagore wrote in English. So I've set that to music and I'm just finishing that off right now. And the other thing is, you know, the other project really right now is to embed myself in the Sannyas community and the parent community around Coyle School here and see what we can produce in terms of real community, because there are rumblings around. There are a lot of people who are not happy with the nuclear family situation. There are a lot of people thinking about alternative ways of living. There are older sannyasins who are looking at the fact that they've inherited money, but that they haven't got children themselves. They would like to do something good with that money, not just pass it on to distant relatives who'll throw it away into consumer lifestyles. And there's an urgent need, you know, especially for older sannyasins, but for younger ones too, you know, to live in community. So I'm very much focused on seeing whether we have a centripetal force here in England, especially in this part of England, the southwest, Devon, whether there's a centripetal force which is starting to bring scattered people into a more centered, more central location. You know, that's both a physical location in terms of maybe trying to get land, get actually some physical commune together, and also just into a spiritual cohesion, you know, because people have been very, very scattered, living their isolated lives, and I'm starting to meet them now, and I'm starting to hear the same story that people aren't actually satisfied by that. We all of us who remember the commune around Osho miss it, because we remember what an amazing place it was. And those who didn't ever have it, at least, wish they had. So we have a beautiful Osho Centre in Dorset up the road, and there is a possibility that more cohesion, more centripetal force might cohere around that spot. But it isn't actually really in the physical location of what we need necessarily. And because of Coyle's schooling and so on, we feel pretty focused here on South Devon. So I'm talking in conversation with a lot of people now, and there are other initiatives sort of bouncing around that I'm hearing up from about the idea of whether we can make some kind of new Osho commune, community, whatever, down here in the southwest of England. So that's really my focus right now.
And that's a really wonderful project, and you know, it's really now giving me inspiration, because of course I'm here in Singapore, it's a temporary, I know it, I'm enjoying it here, there are lots of pluses, but I miss the connection with the Osho people, there are no sannyasins here whatsoever. So, you know, that'd be a great opportunity for me at some point to come back to England, and you know, I'm also thinking in the next 5 to 10 years I want to live somewhere in nature, I don't want to, you know, have this life, office life, commuting and all the rest, you know, I want to be down done with that, be with sannyasin, being in nature. So that'd be great. And I'm also an ex-teacher by profession. So, you know, if you open a school, that'd be like a dream come true to live in a commune and being involved with education. And that'd be amazing.
Well, it's going to take a lot of us to do it because, you know, I'm 64 now and I really haven't got the energy to single-handedly pull off any large projects. You know, I can see it. The only way I could possibly do it is with other people. And many factors have to come into play at the same time, don't they? The physical location, money, availability of property, you know, it all has to come together in the right way.
But I feel like Devon could be a great place because, you know, when I was in England, I know there are lots of sannyasin there, lots of beautiful people. And as you said, you know, like there is a need. Yep. And, you know, if with some kind of magic element, something can materialize, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Yes, wouldn't it?
So we are nearly there. And before we finish, I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
It looks like getting up in the dark, as it's in England right now in the middle of winter, getting up in the dark and getting Coyle's breakfast and my breakfast and Navina's breakfast and then Coyle's lunch and morning snack for school already. And this, I might be doing this alone or I might be doing it with Navina, Coyle's mum, and then sort of welcoming Coyle downstairs and encouraging her to do all the things she needs to do in order to be ready to leave the door just before 8 o'clock in the morning, and then getting her out of the door, bundled up in clothes with hair done and teeth done and food in her back and all the rest, and getting her off to school so that at 8:15 she's exactly there. So
yeah,
that is
school half asleep and half
frozen. Getting her to school half asleep and half frozen.
Okay, so now I totally get when you said that your route to enlightenment is your child. I get the picture now.
Yeah, I mean, that's 5 days a week, isn't it, while school's on. And, you know, we've only just came here. We've only had 2 weeks of school. So it looks a bit different at the weekend. Then we can slob around in my morning routine.
Can we sleep as long?
My morning routine looks much more like slob around, you know.
That's wonderful. Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation is... I would say it's Nada Brahma, because there's something about that humming space that really, I love it. I think Nada Brahma is my favorite meditation.
Okay, brilliant. So the last question is, you leave the OSH experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
Look, Osho, you know, Osho the man, Osho the phenomenon, Osho the being, Osho the guy whose eyes looked into mine that night outside Buddha Hall, is just always inside me. It's not something that goes away. It's not something I can forget. I mean, the feeling is that I owe everything, really, to Osho. You know, I owe my music, my partner, my child. Because I was there and available for Osho by some miracle.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing this. It's wonderful to end on this note of gratitude towards Osho. So that's the end of the show. It's been a real pleasure to getting to know you and chatting with you. And I hope that your project in Devon will materialize and perhaps one day I'll happen to be the teacher of your child. Who knows? So thank you so much, Inmaya, and lots of love.
Thank you so much, Swaram. It's been a real pleasure talking to you and meeting to you, man. I feel very, very strongly what a lovely connection happened during this thing.
Thank you, and lots of love, and bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.